You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 30th of May. The NBA Finals, we're back to basketball, kick in. We'll touch on that. More stuff going on in Houston than we talked about yesterday. Quick little look at a few draft guys today and your questions on a Facebook Live edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, hopefully making it more fun to be a fan during the offseason, because there is no offseason for a true Jazz fan, and that's what we bring it to you. Available for you on the Himalaya app. If you haven't downloaded Himalaya and followed Locked On Jazz yet, great little app to find more things. Free both on Apple as well as on your Play Store, your Google Play Store. You can also follow Locked On Jazz on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, as well as Stitcher. And when you get in your car, let your smart device play podcast Locked On Jazz. So today we're going to take your questions, do a bunch of that. We'll do a few of those draft players we've been doing, and then we'll take more on Friday, maybe extend it out a little bit on tomorrow's show for you. Hey, it's Tim Lacombe live in the show. Woohoo! Saying hi to me, my buddy, former old broadcast assistant. Old intern at, gosh, who knows when, and then BYU coach, and now moving on out of the coaching world so he can actually be a sane human being. But just popped in a hello. Hello to Hayden, hello to Brian, hello to Miles. I don't mean to neglect people that weren't on coaching sidelines for the BYU Cougars and not give you equal love. Hayden! Hey! How are you, Hayden? There, see? Same amount of love I gave to Timmy there. All right, let me just run through a few things on the finals. So I think there's a bunch of things that aren't being talked about. The best transition team in the NBA this year was Toronto, not Golden State. I hear people talking about like the pace of the game and the matchup. Toronto's the number one transition team in the league, and what gets interesting about them is the way Kawhi is playing, is that they should be able to score. They may be able to score in the half court. Now, who guards Kawhi, I don't really know. And what I think is really interesting about this series also is the amount of players that Toronto can throw at the Warriors. So Danny Green starts on Klay Thompson, and if you slow down Klay Thompson a little bit, then I think you really end up with a, you know, you bottleneck them a little bit, particularly without Durant. Like, Klay Thompson to me is the very key guy in this series, and if Danny Green at 31 years old can stick with him and guard him, that's a big deal. Kawhi Leonard can float over to him if he needs to, can switch on to Steph Curry, can go play Draymond Green. Serge Ibaka can do that. If OG Anunoby's healthy, if Norman Powell's out there, Pascal Siakam. I mean, they've got a ton of bodies that they're throwing at you, and it's actually a series to me where I really think Golden State needs Durant. Like, for all the conversation of are they better with or without Durant, we have a lot of really stupid conversations in the playoffs when teams play the same team five or six times in a row, and we decide that that's actually a narrative. It's actually a narrative that matches for that series, not a narrative that actually matches for the playoffs, if that makes sense. So we can make some pretty big mistakes in that regard. In the way we look at things. Now, with that said, I think in this series you need Durant, because Durant's the one guy they can't guard. Maybe Kawhi, but really that's the one guy they can't guard. Whereas Steph and Klay, I think that the Toronto's going to have enough guys, switchability, to be able to really cause them a lot of problems. And then you couple, and we'll see where Golden State is on this. If Golden State had a regular season weakness, and understanding that regular season Golden State is different, they were not a good transition defensive team. They frankly haven't been a very good transition defensive team for about 2 years. They were 16th in the league in transition defense this last year. They were pretty good at denying it, which they were not the year before. And the best transition team in the NBA is the Toronto Raptors. The Raptors' half-court offense is the eighth in the league. They played a lot of transition. In fact, they played the fifth most transition of any team in the league. The big change from Dwayne Casey to Nick Nurse was the amount of transition that Toronto played. So it'll be interesting to me, to see whether or not Toronto can get out and run. Now, if they don't, then that changes things a little bit, but then that's where they start to rely on Kawhi and what they can do there. Golden State defensively is a little interesting. Also, Golden State defensively is the number one defensive team in the league defending the mid-range shot. They're not great defending the rim, actually. They don't let you get there very often, but they're the number one team in the league defending the mid-range shot. So where Kawhi gets a lot of his shots is an area where they're very, very good. They're also the fourth best team in the league at defending the corner three, which is a huge part of Toronto's makeup. So I think this one's interesting, and I think Toronto gets tonight. 9 days off. Toronto's at home. A lot of energy. I think they run by him a little bit tonight. And then I think this gets at least a little interesting as Golden State tries to assimilate DeMarcus Cousins and Kevin Durant back into the mix. Talking to Sam Amick on Locked on NBA today, which is up for you and available. He does not think DeMarcus plays very much. So that will be interesting in that regard. All right, over in Houston, I mentioned this on yesterday's show that there was this coaching turmoil taking place, and we kind of just ran by it. It's bigger than I think we realize now with Daryl Morey kind of reports from Adrian Wojnarowski. And Woj breaks stories, but he doesn't break a lot of stories anymore that someone didn't want out there, if that makes sense. There's two different kinds of reporters in the league right now. There's ones that are I just think Woj is so connected. I mean, this is actually as a compliment. I don't know if it's coming off that way. But he's so connected with so many different guys that I just don't think he's reporting a lot of stuff right now that someone doesn't want out there. So Daryl Morey wants out there that, like, Houston's willing to trade anyone, which takes me back to the whole aspect of where are we and what is going on with Chris Paul and his mercurial personality and inability to get along with people. I think that's a huge, huge question mark because you have the stories about the fight going on with him and James Harden are the big argument, and you just have the backstory, and maybe I'm connecting dots that shouldn't be connected, but I do think that's at least of some interest to keep an eye on out there. Otherwise, I don't think there's a lot of other major stuff. We're kind of finally waiting for a basketball game, which is super, super fun. I'm so excited to actually watch basketball tonight. I want to get to your questions, but before we do, I wanted to jump and kind of update a few more aspects to, by the way, Nylon Calculus, who I always am impressed by, 56% chance the Raptors win the series, not the Warriors. I think that, you know, there's some regular season numbers in there that are probably not entirely right. All right, let's go let's run through a few draft prospects, and then we'll get to, if you missed the last two shows, we ran through the draft prospects, trying to kind of zero in on some guys. Some of the interesting finds we had so far, I thought was DeAndre Hunter out of Virginia, who'll be a top five pick, 97th percentile in the limited pick and roll action he used, 82nd percentile. He just peaked out, limited numbers because of that system, but all of his stuff kind of looked really, really good. His off the dribble stuff was not totally great. Great shooting out of Kobe White out of North Carolina, but very limited on all the athletic numbers. Jarrett Culver, Texas Tech, who's floating around the ninth pick, had some really interesting aspects to him. One, just the amount of pick and roll ball handling he had at 6'6", 201 pick and roll attempts, 101 isolation attempts, where he was in the 77th percentile, and his shooting was above average. His open shooting was fine, and his off the dribble game was kind of like, there just seemed to be pieces there. Cam Reddish was actually the opposite. Cam Reddish did not look great in a lot of the numbers that I ran the other day. Maybe the off the dribble jumper stuff mid range, but nothing particularly impressive there. Nickeil Alexander-Walker out of Virginia Tech peaked for us yesterday. 88th percentile in transition, 70th percentile with 161 pick and roll attempts, spot up percentile, 82nd percentile. So really, that one is the numbers player right now that's jumped out to me. I haven't watched any of these guys yet. The numbers that jumped out to me is Nickeil Walker. I don't know how to pronounce it. Look good. Cameron Johnson's the best shooter we've seen so far. So let's run through a few of these guys. Ruchi Hachimura out of Gonzaga, 6'8", power forward, transition 89th percentile. So if you're new to those, actually, before let's take a quick break. Then we'll come back, run through those some guys, and then take your call. Sorry, I got ahead of myself and forgot what I was supposed to be doing. Today's show is brought to you by our friends over at Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. They're also in Logan and in Linden. Here's what I would tell you: two things. One, when I got to know the Murdoch family, this is a family that takes it very seriously how they treat their customers and what they're doing in their 90 years in Salt Lake City. That's what they've carried is the pride of their family name, and the experience that you have translates to that family, you know, to what they feel about themselves. That's very, very important to them. That's at the core of how they do business. And then there's the Hyundai brand, which I didn't know a lot about until I got associated with Blake and the crew. And I'll tell you what. What jumps out to me about the Hyundai brand is how much value you get for the dollar. Take a moment. If you're shopping for a car right now, find the comparable. If you're looking for a mid-sized SUV, look at the Tucson. Big SUV, look at the Santa Fe. If you're looking for the little one, look at the Kona. If you're looking for, you know, the Sonata or the Elantra, go take a second and see for the same dollar figure or less how many more features and add-ons and safety elements you get with the Hyundai than you get compared to other cars out there. It's Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street, 0% APR in May. We're waiting to hear the June deals, but still 0% APR for 72 months. So go check it out. It's about to go away at Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. Today's show also brought to you by Grip6.com. Grip6.com/lock for the belt. Guys, it's what I wear for a belt. Keenan showed it to me, got me hooked. Now I have my three different belts. I interchange my buckles. So here's the cool thing. You have the belt, and you also have the buckles, and the buckles you can interchange. So because they just slide right off. So you put a new one on, a different color, and that strap can become useful for four or five different buckles. No holes, no loops, no flaps. Trademark system where it flips in, patented system, it flips in right behind it, gets locks in. Some of the guys that are heavier that listen to the show have said, hey, you know what? This is the first belt I have that doesn't cinch, doesn't feel terrible. It's fantastic. Grip6.com/lock. Great Father's Day gift as well. Indestructible, made here in Utah. And it is grip6.com/lock. All right, before we get to your questions, let's get to a few of these. Ruchi Hachimura, 89th percentile in transition and 66th percentile in isolation. What does that mean to me? Those are the two numbers I look at to see if you're athletic. They don't always go together. Sometimes they show other things. But those things show me, wow, all right, that's a pretty good athlete. No pick and roll ball handling, but 80th percentile as a roll man at 6'8", and is shooting bona fide, 93rd percentile in spot up. 61% effective field goal percentage on 92 attempts. That's a pretty special connection right there for the Gonzaga junior. 89th percentile transition and 66th percentile isolation, both very, very high with big numbers, 71 isolation attempts, 117 transition. Then you got 92 spot-up attempts. He's in the 93rd percentile again. He was 19 of 48 on his catch and shoots, which puts him at about average. His contested catch and shoots, he was a little bit better. And then his jumper off the dribble percentile is in the 87th percentile, 25 of 49. So there's some really interesting aspects here to Rui Hachimura out of Gonzaga. Ability to get the shot off. Need to watch him a little bit more. I haven't watched him at all. I watched him once in the NCAA tournament at 6'8", 230. But is he a spot-up shooter? 93rd percentile on spot-up shooting. Cameron Johnson is better. Kobe White, North Carolina, is better. And that's it from the guys whose numbers we've run so far. 89th percentile transition percentage. The guys that are better, Brandon Clark out of Gonzaga was better. Jackson Hayes, the center out of Texas, was better. And Zion Williams was better. Not many more. Isolation, 66th percentile. Grant Williams out of Tennessee, we talked about the other day, was better. Romeo Langford is better. Heard some questions, by the way, on him. Brandon Clark, 86th percentile, is better. And Zion Williamson is better. Pretty interesting little collection of numbers here by Rui Hachimura. Keldon Johnson, Kentucky, freshman shooting guard, 6'6". Comes out as 49th percentile in transition. I like that to be above 75th percentile. The only guys that have been worse than that are Kobe White, North Carolina. Cam Reddish was worse than that. And Romeo Langford. So really low by Kendall Johnson. And the same thing for Nicholas Claxton, the 6'11 center out of Georgia. His numbers are super low on that as well in transition. Kendall Johnson did not have many isolation attempts. He did not play with the pick and roll or play as the pick and roll man. So I don't know who Kendall Johnson is at all. I've never seen him. He's a freshman shooting guard, 6'6 out of Kentucky. But here's what my numbers are telling me. This is pretty, like, so 49th percentile in transition, didn't play with the ball in his hands at all. His shooting, he's in the 81st percentile spot up on 181 attempts. Catch and shoot, 79th percentile, shot 40 of 90. And his unguarded catch and shoot percentile was the 74th percentile, 23 of 51. And then limited off the bounce, 35 attempts. So I've got a shooting guard here who can't play with the ball in his hands and is just a shooter, just a pure shooter. That's hard in this league, unless you believe that like there's some Devin Booker element here that he has not been taught, used right, or something of that nature. But that's a hard way to live in this. One more we'll look at, Tyler Hero out of Kentucky. 87th percentile in transition in 131 attempts. That's super impressive. Did not run any isolation. Pick and roll he ran with 25 times with the ball in his hands. He was in the 98th percentile. Now what do we got here? Like, this gets interesting to me. So now you've got, to me, numbers-wise, an elite athlete in Tyler Hero from his transition numbers. Limited ball handling because Kentucky has so many other guys. Let's go look at his shooting. 70th percentile in spot-up. That's pretty good. Right, there's guys that are better, but that's pretty good. 52% effective field goal percentage on 171 attempts. His pure catch and shoot slips. He goes to 37 of 108 to the 47th percentile, but his open shooting's better than that. And then the really interesting one, off the bounce, 49 of 110 for 82%. There are of guys in this draft that There are only three other guys that I've looked at so far who've taken at least 110 shots off the bounce. They're Kobe White out of North Carolina and Jarrett Culver out of Texas Tech. So that's a big number right there from Tyler Hero to have 110 shots off the bounce in the 82nd percentile of making him at 49.5%. That is the highest of anybody we've talked about in the 20 picks of the draft, other than the kid out of Vanderbilt who's top five, Garland, I think is his last name. He's only played a few games. So this is the best off-the-bounce shooter we have. He's a good spot-up shooter. He played limited pick-and-roll action, but was seemed to be good at it, and was an elite athlete. This is the first guy at 22 that I've seen that I'm like, hey, what's going on here? Tyler Hero, Kentucky. You know, this is kind of the beauty of, I think the beauty of this segment is that there's no bias to what I've seen. I don't know. I've not seen anything about him all year. And in fact, yesterday made a silly mistake on the show about the fact that he, I just found out he's white. I didn't know that. I just looked him up. I now just found out he's white. So that's interesting to me too, because there's a bias that a white guy's not an athlete and his athletic numbers peak out. Pretty interesting. Out of Wisconsin, I'm learning this right now, 6'5". I don't know. Keep an eye on him. Like, that's an intriguing prospect to me. Played 33 minutes a night as a freshman. He averaged, shot 94% from the free throw line. Averaged 14 points a game for Kentucky. Like, I'm pretty intrigued there. All right, let's get to some of your questions and what you want to know. Hello to everybody. All right. A lot of stuff on Twitter. Is now the time for the Jazz to take some financial risks and overpay or wait till Rudy and Donovan are in their full prime? No, I mean, I think we're close. Your full prime is 26, 27. It's not 31, 32. Your experience prime is 31, 32. But your prime is 26, 27. Our guys are not that far off their prime. Any chance you could get Walt Perrin on for a podcast? I'd like to know more about the pre-draft process that he goes through. Maybe. I'll see. That would be nice. I like Walt. If the Jazz miss on a big-name free agent, would they have enough assets to trade for Bradley Beal, and would he fit well? He would fit great because he's terrific. But I don't think we have any assets other than Donovan that would get... Bradley Beal's better than Donovan Mitchell. So you're trading Donovan and something for Bradley Beal. Now, is Donovan going to be better maybe? Possibly. But right now, Bradley Beal's a better player than Donovan Mitchell in most people's mind. So you're trading Donovan Mitchell for Bradley Beal. If you're the Wizards aren't doing that unless you make that. Like, they're not taking bit pieces. Like, think about it as though they asked for Donovan Mitchell. Comparable players. What are you asking for? Both borderline third-team NBA. What is the reasonable expectation for this offseason moves? I want to get excited, but don't want to be too disappointed if it doesn't go. I mean, I think the reasonable expectations is some higher-level pieces. So it's a Bojan Bogdanović out of Indiana, along with a, I don't know, Patrick Beverley type, you know, just higher-level pieces around. I don't think you can expect to have a massive game-changing Tobias Harris, Kemba Walker, Mike Conley type thing take place. Maybe. I mean, the Mike Conley stuff is at least interesting in those regards. Today's show brought to you in part by Barbecue Pit Stop. Stop by. Father's Day gifts there as well, located in three different locations. You can stop by the Barbecue Pit Stop and say hi to the guys in Layton, in Lehigh, and at 1300 South and 3rd West. Great selection, expertise, lifelong barbecue advisors. Also brought to you in part by Hotels.com. Don't hate like your friends' trips. Go make your own plans on Hotels.com. All right, continuing through, we're going to get a call from DJ and PK here. It's going to end the show because I have to do their show. Memphis Grizzlies fan has told me that the reason Conley trade didn't go through this season was because we didn't want to give up Dante Exum. Is that true? I think the Conley trade didn't go through because they didn't want to trade Mike Conley. I think they put both Conley and Gasol out there so that it was comfortable and they didn't really want to trade Mike Conley and they wanted to trade Marc Gasol because he had been problematic. And I think they thought that whatever they could get for Mike Conley at the deadline, they could get from Mike Conley at the draft day or thereabouts as well. So that's my take on why Mike Conley deal did not go through. I don't think it's that we wouldn't offer Dante, but I don't know if that's true. Sweet hair. Thanks. Appreciate it. Steve Starks, our president, makes fun of me all the time about the fact I come on this with my hair all over the place, totally, like in my sleep shirt. What were Donovan's numbers in college, and did they predict what he is now? That is awesome. Let's see if I can find that really quickly. That is a great question. All right, let me see if I can find Donovan Mitchell's senior year. So that would be the 2016-17 season. And then we would need Louisville. You know, if I was prepared for that question, be interesting to see if, like, what my system would have said about Donovan Mitchell. Let's see. Here's Donovan Mitchell's senior season, I believe. Donovan Mitchell in transition, 28%. We would have called him I would have looked at him and said he was non-athletic. That's terrible. 28 percentiles, finishes 51%. And it's because he was a 2-foot jumper, not a 1-foot jumper, by the way. Isolation numbers, he ran limited isolation, but he was very good at 79%. He peaked out off the cut. He was in the 80th percentile as a pick-and-roll ball handler. That would have jumped out to us there. He had 116 chances with the ball, 80th percentile. And then as a spot-up shooter, he was in the 86th percentile. So those numbers would have looked really good. His catch-and-shoot stuff was unguarded catch-and-shoot was in the 90th percentile, one of the best unguarded shooters. So and then off the bounce, he was in the 70th percentile. So yes, Donovan would have been very similar, but I would have been very concerned about those transition numbers and a lack of athleticism finishing in transition, which is interesting because we think he was such a great athlete. But he does have that 2-foot, 1-foot jump issue. But that is a great question. Who asked that? Kyle Feynman. Thank you so much. That was a great question. So yeah, on our system that we're using right now, on Donovan, we would have looked at that and said, like, woo, pretty interesting in a lot of regards to that. I wonder if we looked at, like, Trey Burke, what would have happened. Trey Burke had a pretty good college year. I'd have to guess. Off the top of my head, I can't do what year Trey Burke is. But that's an interesting, you know, I've had some success on this. Landry Shamet was one that we had a lot of success on last year that kind of peaked out our numbers as the best shooter in the draft and some others. So it'd be fun to go back and look at some players who've been good and see what they have to say. What does Milwaukee need to do to get better next year? I don't know. I think experience is probably the bigger thing for them. And at this point, they've got their core pieces, and then they start to piece together. And Bledsoe will get better in every playoff. Jeff Neiman, Julius Randle, what is the price on the open market, and won't Nola drop him because he overlaps with Zion's skill set? I think Randle probably moves. I think Randle is best as a center, not a power forward. But maybe I'm wrong on that. So I think that makes it a little difficult for him, undersized, but his offense has developed. His shooting is getting better. His isolation game is really strong. Wow. The hearts are going nuts about Julius Randle. People fired up on the Julius Randle train on the live Facebook show. His numbers are good. His shooting is still suspect. His rebounding is good. His ability to play the ball in his hands is good. His isolation numbers are good. He's intriguing. I mean, I think he's better than what the Lakers gave him credit for. Analytics, analytics, analytics. Some numbers get to me. Eye test is better. Off the bounce percentage. Well, I mean, if you don't buy it, that's fine. But I actually would argue the other way. I think the numbers preclude you from having a bias. An off-the-bounce number percentage is pretty important. Tells me whether somebody has enough handle to be able to get separation, athleticism to get separation, whether they have a quick release. The unguarded shooting number is important differently. Catch and shoot, just you're unguarded, you're open. Can you knock it down? Like a lot of these guys in college, because not all five guys in college can score. And so you end up taking a lot of contested catch and shoot shots because of college spacing is bad and things of that nature. So can you just knock down the open look? To me, that's important. An off-the-bounce game tells me, do you have the ability to play off the bounce? A little bit also tells me if you can play pick and roll, because if you can play off the bounce, you can probably end up playing pick and roll. Colleges don't run as much pick and roll as they do in the pros. So there's actually a pretty good logic to why each of these numbers has some value to it. Good morning. Hope you're enjoying your coffee. I've had one cup. I need to change to my new Peruvian espresso, and I haven't gotten that done yet. Would be better to look at a stretch five that can start at the four rather than the standard stretch four. Why? Why would we want a stretch five that can start at the four? Like, but that's just a four. Why wouldn't we just want a four? I don't understand. So, like, Dwayne Dedman is a stretch five. We're going to start him next to Rudy for some reason? Can't handle? Stretch five traditionally can't play with the ball in his hands. I want four guys that can play with the ball in the hands. That's why I love Tobias, because he can play with the ball in his hands. Am I completely wrong to think that Conley is overrated? I want to get better, but I'm guessing I'm longing for another route. I don't think Mike Conley is like the... I think Mike Conley is perfectly rated. He's a borderline... He's a notch below an all-star player. When he plays Russell Westbrook, you have a disadvantage. When he plays... some Steph Curry, you're at a disadvantage. When he plays Dame Lillard, you're probably at a disadvantage. So I'm kind of completely with you. He can shoot it fairly well. Not great, but fairly well. He is a pretty darn good pick and roll player. He understands the game. He's got great gumption and leadership and quality. Personality stuff, like if that's, he peaks out on that. His pick and roll game is in the 81st percentile. His spot up shooting is in the 85th. I mean, that's a pretty high level player right there. That's a considerable upgrade from where Ricky is, frankly. He's long, he's old, he's 31 years old or something like that. I mean, that's a little disconcerting. But he does everything pretty well. I mean, he really doesn't do anything badly. He's not a great transition player because he's not a great athlete. But otherwise, he does everything really, really well. I would guess he's not a great late shot clock player. Okay. You're not going to go give him the ball and make him make a play late in the game one-on-one, but you're probably going to play pick and roll and hope he finds the right guy. was listening to a podcast today that indicated that Mirotić might be available given his postseason. Yeah, I mean, I think there's no question Mirotić is available. They played Ilyasova over him in the postseason. I can't imagine he goes back to Milwaukee. We probably should look at him. He's my version of what that last question on Conley is. The numbers say he should be great, and there's something to me that's lacking about him. I just have never been – it makes total sense. He seemingly fits great next to Rudy. He's numerically, he is far more of a unique player than you would think he is, in the sense that, I mean, he can do stuff that most guys can't do. At that size, he's actually a pretty good rebounder. He's a pretty good shooter. He can actually, shoot the ball or handle the ball. I mean, but to me, I always feel like there's something kind of lacking out of him, and I don't have any explanation of why that would be. So that's one where, on this whole numbers versus eye test argument, my eye test on Mirotić leaves me yearning for more, and then I go look at the numbers, and they're great, and I can't figure out what that is. Would we pick up Randall if we get rid of Faves? Could play backup to Rudy and power forward. It's interesting. You have to decide he's a power forward. I think he's more of a center. I think he'd be a great backup center to Gobert. Give us a different team. We'd play faster with that second unit. He could do a lot of things. Though I am also a little bit of a believer that, like, I would like a Robin Lopez behind Rudy Gobert if we got rid of Favors, so that you had the exact same type of player as Rudy Gobert, maybe just not as good, but then the team didn't have to change the way he played. Okay, well-stated, analytics are cool. All right, came around that quickly. Will CP3 be on the Rockets next year? I think they're perfectly willing to move that contract. They're aware of what it is, and there might be somebody out there who thinks that Chris Paul pushes them over the edge. I don't know. Would you take Chris Paul? You take Chris Paul for 2 years to go with Donovan and Rudy here? Hadn't thought about it. Would we do it? It's a hell of a risk, hell of a contract, hell of a player. Relieve some of the burden on Donovan. If we could bring in Mike Conley and grab Randall out of free agency, that would be nice. I don't think you can do both because Conley's taking $30 million a year cap. I'd rather see someone like Brogdon. I like Brogdon, bona fide shooter, 50, 40, 90 this year seemed unnatural. The high percentage of shooting on the mid-range shots makes me a little nervous that what he did this last year is not sustainable on Malcolm Brogdon. And he really... he's not an isolation player that he's going to beat you. He's an isolation player who's going to power you to a spot and get things done. You know what? I had my days wrong. I don't have to get off because of DJ and PK. I thought today was Friday there for a second. That was a text. I just sent a text to Jake saying, are we doing today? I don't have to get off for DJ and PK. At all. I still have to get off in a second because we're at 30 minutes. But if we have to move Mr. Favors, we're losing a starting four and a backup five. That is factual. But we've talked about this a lot. The lineups with Rudy and a stretch four have, for 3 years in a row, been better, considerably better than the lineups with Favors and Rudy. The lineups with Favors and Rudy are good. The other ones are better. And so... it will be interesting to see what we do in that regard. There's an argument both ways. Did we discuss Brandon Clark? We did yesterday out of Gonzaga. Elite-level athlete, both in it peaks out on transition as well as isolation percentage. Did not play the ball in his hands at all in the pick and roll in the power forward position, but was pretty good finishing. Spot up shooting was in the 92nd percentile. So pretty interesting player. You've got a transition in the 90th. Isolation play is in the 86th percentile. Shooting is in the 92nd on spot up. But when you get to his catch and shoot, struggles. 8 of 23 on catch and shoot, 3 of 14 on wide open catch and shoot, and no off the bounce game. So you've got, you've got an elite level athlete who rolls pretty well who might have some potential shooting on Brandon Clark. All right, well, you guys can all chew on CP3. That seems to be the interesting kind of idea today. I don't know. I'm not totally dismissing it. It's just difficult to deal with for every team he's ever been on. So, and the aging Chris Paul, to me, is a real problem. Wow, that was quite a sneeze. Sorry. The aging Chris Paul, to me, is a problem. I think I'm out on that deal. All right. Talk to you guys soon. Hope you're doing great. Appreciate you very much tuning in and being so loyal to this program on the live Thursday show today. Thanks as well to grip6.com/lock. And also, Untuck It, Father's Day gifts, promo code NBA gets you 20% off at untuckit.com. Check them out. Have a great day.